Welcome to Psychology Unlocked, your go-to podcast for AQA A-level psychology. I'm your host, and today we're diving deep into one of the most fascinating and practically important topics in the entire specification, factors affecting eyewitness testimony. Whether you're revising for your AS exam or pushing for that top A-star grade, this episode is going to give you everything you need. So let's get into it. First, let's set the scene. Eyewitness testimony, or EWT as we'll call it throughout, refers to the use of witnesses who report their memory of an event, such as a crime, to a court of law. You might think that memory works like a video camera, recording events faithfully and playing them back accurately. But decades of psychological research have shown us something far more unsettling. Memory is reconstructive, not reproductive. It can be shaped, distorted, and even entirely replaced by information we encounter after the event. And that has enormous real-world consequences for the justice system. UCCA examiners want you to demonstrate detailed knowledge of three main factors: leading questions, post-event discussion, and anxiety. They also want you to evaluate these factors critically, and that means going beyond simply saying the study lacked ecological validity. You need to be precise, analytical, and synoptic. Let's work through each factor now. Factor one, leading questions. The landmark study here is Loftus and Palmer, conducted in 1974. This is one of the most cited studies in the entire history of psychology, and for good reason. Loftus and Palmer showed participants film clips of car accidents and then asked them questions about what they had seen. The critical manipulation was in the verb used in the question. One group was asked, "How fast were the cars going when they smashed into each other?" Another group was asked the same question, but with the verb hit instead of smashed. A third group heard contacted. The results were striking. The group who heard smashed estimated the speed at around 40.8 miles per hour on average. The hit group estimated 34 miles per hour. The contacted group gave the lowest estimate of around 31.8 miles per hour. But it gets even more interesting. 1 week later, participants were asked whether they had seen broken glass in the film. There was no broken glass, yet 32% of the smash group said yes, compared to only 14% of the hit group. Now here is where the exam marks really start to accumulate. You must be able to distinguish between two explanations for why leading questions affect EWT. The first is response bias. This explanation suggests that the leading question does not actually change the memory itself. The participant's underlying memory trace remains intact. Instead, the leading question simply influences how the participant responds. They give a different answer because the question implies a certain response is expected. Think of it like social desirability. They're going along with what seems to be suggested. The second explanation is substitution. This is the more radical claim associated with Loftus's own theoretical position. Substitution argues that the misleading information actually overwrites or replaces the original memory trace. The post-event information becomes incorporated into the memory itself, so the participant genuinely believes they saw broken glass. Examiners will specifically credit candidates who can articulate this distinction clearly and link it to the evidence. Now for evaluation of leading questions research. The key strength is its scientific rigor. Loftus and Palmer used a controlled laboratory experiment, meaning variables were tightly controlled and the study has high internal validity. We can be more confident that the verb change caused the difference in estimates. However, and this is crucial, the artificial nature of the task is a significant limitation. Watching a film clip of a car accident in a psychology lab is fundamentally different from witnessing a real crime. Real crimes involve genuine emotional arousal, stress, and personal stakes. Participants in Loftus and Palmer's study had no reason to encode the event deeply. This means the study may lack ecological validity, and we should be cautious about generalizing its findings to real courtroom situations. Examiners will credit you for making this link explicitly. The lack of emotional arousal in lab studies is a direct threat to external validity. Factor two, post-event discussion. This refers to the contamination of a witness's memory through conversations with other witnesses or through exposure to media coverage after an event. The key study here is Gabber and colleagues, published in 2003. In this study, pairs of participants watched different versions of the same crime scene video. Each participant saw the event from a different camera angle, meaning they each had access to information the other did not. After watching, participants were allowed to discuss what they had seen. The results were alarming. 71% of participants reported information they had not actually seen in their own version of the video, information they could only have acquired through the discussion with their co-witness. In a control condition where participants did not discuss the event, this figure dropped to zero. This phenomenon is called memory conformity, and it demonstrates powerfully how post-event discussion can corrupt the accuracy of eyewitness accounts. The real-world implications are profound. In major criminal investigations, witnesses often talk to each other before giving formal statements. They may also be exposed to news coverage that contains details they did not personally witness. Gabbert's research suggests this is not a trivial concern. It can fundamentally alter what witnesses report. For evaluation, you should note that Gabbert's study, while more ecologically valid than purely laboratory-based research, still used a video rather than a real event. Participants knew they were in a study, which may have introduced demand characteristics. They may have been more willing to incorporate others' information than they would be in a real-world scenario where the stakes are higher. Factor 3. Anxiety. This is where things get really interesting and where many candidates lose marks by oversimplifying. The relationship between anxiety and EWT accuracy is not straightforward. It is not simply the case that anxiety makes memory worse. The evidence is genuinely contradictory, and examiners want you to engage with that contradiction rather than ignore it. Let's start with the evidence that anxiety has a negative effect. Johnson and Scott conducted a study in 1976, often referred to as the Weapon Focus Study. Participants sat in a waiting room and heard a staged conversation in the next room. In the low anxiety condition, a man walked out holding a pen with grease on his hands. In the high anxiety condition, a man walked out holding a bloody knife. Participants were later asked to identify the man from a set of photographs. Those in the low anxiety pen condition correctly identified the man 49% of the time. Those in the high anxiety knife condition identified him correctly only 33% of the time. This is the weapon focus effect, the idea that a threatening object captures attention so powerfully that the witness's cognitive resources are directed toward the weapon at the expense of encoding other details like the perpetrator's face. This is explained by the tunnel theory of memory. Under high stress, attention narrows like a tunnel, focusing on the most threatening element and excluding peripheral details. But now, here is the crucial counter-evidence. Yui and Cutshall conducted a field study in 1986 following a real-life shooting incident in Vancouver, Canada. A gun shop owner shot and killed an armed robber. There were 21 witnesses. Yui and Cutshall interviewed 13 of them 4 to 5 months after the event and compared their accounts to the original police reports. The witnesses showed remarkably accurate and detailed recall even months later. Those who reported the highest levels of stress at the time of the shooting actually gave the most accurate accounts. This directly contradicts the weapon focus findings and suggests that in real life, high-stakes situations, anxiety may actually enhance memory rather than impair it. How do we reconcile these contradictory findings? The Yerkes-Dodson inverted U hypothesis provides a useful framework. This model proposes that the relationship between arousal and performance follows an inverted U-shaped curve. At very low levels of arousal, performance, including memory encoding, is poor because the individual is not sufficiently alert. As arousal increases to a moderate optimal level, performance peaks. But if arousal continues to increase beyond this optimal point, performance declines again. Applied to EWT, moderate anxiety may sharpen attention and improve encoding, while extreme anxiety, such as witnessing a violent crime at close range, may overwhelm cognitive resources and impair recall. A sophisticated piece of evaluation that examiners will credit is the Pickle 1998 study. Pickle argued that the weapon focus effect may not be caused by anxiety at all. It may instead be caused by surprise or unusualness. In her study, she manipulated both the unusualness and the threat level of objects. She found that unusual objects, such as a raw chicken, produced the same weapon focus effect as threatening objects like a gun, even though a raw chicken is not threatening. This suggests that it is the bizarreness or unexpectedness of the weapon that captures attention, not the anxiety it produces. This is a highly sophisticated evaluation point that moves beyond generic criticism and engages with the theoretical underpinnings of the research. Now, let's move to exam tips and common mistakes. I want to be really direct with you here because these are the things that separate the A-star candidates from the rest. Common mistake number one, confusing Johnson and Scott with Yui and Cutshall. These studies have opposite findings. Johnson and Scott found a negative effect of anxiety on EWT accuracy, the weapon focus effect. Yuiel and Cutshall found a positive effect, real-life stress enhanced accuracy. Get these the wrong way round and you will lose marks. A good way to remember it, Johnson and Scott used a laboratory study, artificial controlled negative result. Yui and Cutshall used a field study, real-life, messy, positive result. Common mistake number two, saying anxiety affects memory without specifying the direction. Examiners will not credit vague statements. You must say whether anxiety improves or impairs recall, and you must specify the conditions under which each effect occurs. Use the Yerkes-Dodson curve to structure your answer. Common mistake number 3, failing to distinguish between response bias and substitution when discussing leading questions. This distinction is worth specific marks. Response bias means the memory is unchanged, but the response is different. Substitution means the memory itself is altered. Make this explicit. Common mistake number 4, using generic evaluation phrases like, the study lacked ecological validity without explaining why this matters for the specific findings. Always ask yourself, what is the consequence of this limitation for the conclusions we can draw? For 16-mark essay questions, AQA expects a clear structure. Aim for approximately 6 marks of AO1 description, accurate, detailed knowledge of the studies and theories. Then 3 distinct evaluation paragraphs using the Peel structure, point, evidence, explanation, and link back to the question. Your evaluation should include methodological criticism, contradictory evidence, and real-world application. Always end with a conclusion that makes a clear, justified judgment. For shorter questions, the 4-mark or 6-mark describe or explain questions, use the rule of 1 mark per developed point. For a 4-mark question, aim for 2 fully developed points. For a 6-mark question, aim for 3. Always use the specific study names, dates, and findings. Never speak in generalities. Now for our quickfire recall quiz, I'll ask the questions, pause the podcast, and try to answer before I give you the answer. Ready? Question 1. What were the 5 verbs used in Loftus and Palmer's 1974 study, and what was the approximate speed estimate for the word smashed? Answer. The verbs were smashed, collided, bumped, hit, and contacted. Smashed produced an average estimate of around 40.8 miles per hour. Question 2. What percentage of participants in Gabbard et al. 2003 reported information they had not seen in their own video after discussing it with a co-witness? Answer, 71%. Question 3. In Johnson and Scott's weapon focus study, what were the correct identification rates for the pen condition versus the knife condition? Answer, 49% for the pen condition, 33% for the knife condition. Question 4. What does Pickle's 1998 raw chicken study suggest about the weapon focus effect? Answer. That the effect may be caused by unusualness or surprise rather than anxiety per se. Question 5. What is the key difference between response bias and substitution as explanations for leading questions? Answer. Response bias means the memory is unchanged, but the participant gives a different answer due to social influence. Substitution means the misleading post-event information actually replaces or alters the original memory trace. And finally, let's wrap up with a summary. Today, we covered 3 main factors affecting eyewitness testimony. Leading questions, studied by Loftus and Palmer in 1974, can alter recall through either response bias or genuine memory substitution. Post-event discussion, studied by Gabber and colleagues in 2003, can cause memory conformity, with 71% of participants incorporating information they never saw. And anxiety has a complex, nonlinear relationship with memory accuracy, best explained by the Yerkes-Dodson inverted U hypothesis, with Johnson and Scott showing a negative weapon focus effect and UE and Cutshall showing a positive effect in real-life situations. Remember to use Pickle's 1998 study as sophisticated counter-evidence to the weapon focus explanation. The key to top marks in this topic is precision. Precise study names, precise dates, precise findings, and precise theoretical distinctions. Examiners reward candidates who demonstrate genuine understanding rather than surface-level recall. Thank you so much for listening to Psychology Unlocked. Good luck with your revision. You've got this. See you in the next episode.